Welcome to the Intro Biology Podcast. Today we'll be discussing macromolecules and carbohydrates. So macromolecules are large molecules formed by joining smaller molecules together. In biology, the main macromolecules that we deal with are polysaccharides, which are polymers of monosaccharides or simpler sugars, proteins that are polymers of amino acids, and nucleic acids that are polymers of nucleotides. The other class of macromolecule is a lipid that we'll talk about, but it's slightly different than the others in that it's not a simple addition of smaller units together. But that'll be a topic for a future podcast. Polymers are long molecules consisting of many similar or identical monomers linked together, and monomers are the subunits of polymers. When you synthesize or break down a polymer, there are machines, if you will, inside the cell that allow us to do this, and those are called enzymes. Enzymes are macromolecules, usually proteins, that serve as catalysts, which are chemical agents that increase the rate of a reaction without being consumed in the reaction. One of the ways that you can form a polymer is through a condensation reaction. This is when two molecules are covalently linked together, and in the process, a small molecule is lost. One type of condensation reaction is called a dehydration reaction, and it's called a dehydration reaction because the small molecule that's lost is water. So when the two molecules are brought together, the hydrogen atom on one of the molecules and the OH group or the hydroxide group on the other molecule come together, break off, form water, and are released, and those two molecules are now covalently bonded. The opposite of a dehydration reaction that synthesizes a polymer is a hydrolysis reaction that uses water to break the covalent bonds in a polymer. The macromolecule that we'll be discussing today are polysaccharides, which are made up of smaller carbohydrate monomers. So carbohydrates generally take on the chemical formula CH2O. Which means that there are twice as many hydrogens as there are carbons and oxygens, which have the same number of atoms in a carbohydrate. One carbohydrate is called a monosaccharide, two carbohydrates together are called a disaccharide, and more than two carbohydrates together are called a polysaccharide. Carbohydrates, particularly the monosaccharides, can either exist in a linear chain or in a ringed structure. So if you take glucose, for example, the most common sugar that we deal with, it is a six-carbon molecule, and in its linear form, each of those six carbons is bound to a hydrogen group and a hydroxyl group, and depending on whether or not it's interior or at the ends of that chain, it could also be bound to another hydrogen atom or to the carbonyl group or an aldehyde group that we've discussed previously. When that linear structure forms a ringed structure, one of the carbons in that chain, specifically the hydroxyl group bound to that carbon, will form a covalent bond with the carbon that is a part of the carbonyl group at the end of the carbon chain. And when it does so, you now have completed the circle, you now have a ringed structure where you haven't gained or lost any atoms, you've just rearranged how those atoms are bound together. One thing to note is that there is a diversity that exists in the way that sugars can be arranged. As I mentioned, in their linear form, they're carbons bound together, and at the ends, one of those carbons can be bound to a double bond to an oxygen, which is the carbonyl group. It is possible, however, to rearrange that structure where that carbonyl carbon is no longer on the end of the chain, it can be in the middle of the chain. Again, that does not change the number or types of atoms in the molecule, it just changes how those atoms are bound together. For example, ribose, one of the sugar components of ribonucleic acids or RNAs, has its carbonyl group at the end of a five-carbon chain. However, if you just move that carbonyl group interior to one of the positions within the chain, not at the end of the chain, you've now converted it from ribose to ribulose. It has the same chemical formula, C5H10O, again, where there are twice as many hydrogens as there are carbons or oxygens, but it's now a different sugar. Just also to comment on this formation of a ringed structure. When the hydroxyl group on one of the carbons forms a bond with the carbon within the carbonyl group that was bound, double bound to oxygen, when that bond is formed and it forms a ring, you now essentially form a two-dimensional plane out of which there are sticking hydroxyl groups and hydrogen atoms from all the other carbons. And again, I do recommend looking up images of this online to appreciate how you have a plane and then functional groups sticking above or below the plane. But importantly, when the bond is formed between the hydroxyl group on one of the carbons and the carbon in the carbonyl group, that hydrogen and oxygen that were bound to the carbon that was the carbonyl carbon now have a choice as to whether or not they're pointed above or below the plane of the ring. All of the other carbons, their positions are already determined. Those carbons are forming four bonds. They cannot switch those bonds. But the carbonyl carbon is only bound to three things before it gets bound by the hydroxyl group. So it does have a choice when that bond forms as to whether or not the oxygen in the carbonyl points up or points down. And this ability to have two configurations is actually noted when we describe the structures of those sugars. We denote the difference between whether or not that oxygen that becomes a hydroxyl group points up or down as alpha or beta. If the hydroxyl group points down below the plane of the ring, it's called the alpha sugar. And if that hydroxyl group points above the plane of the sugar, it's called a beta sugar. So that describes how monosaccharides can arrange themselves in ring structures. Now to discuss how two monosaccharides come together to form a disaccharide. The bond between two monosaccharides, or between a disaccharide and another disaccharide, basically the bond between two carbohydrates, whether or not they're by themselves or part of a larger group, is called a glycosidic linkage. And this is the covalent bond formed between two monosaccharides, and this occurs via a dehydration reaction, which you'll remember is when water is lost in the formation of that bond. When a glycosidic linkage is formed between two sugars, we denote the configuration based on which carbon atoms in each sugar participate in that new bond. The carbon atoms in the ringed structure are numbered around the ring, and they're numbered clockwise. They usually start at the carbon that's immediately clockwise or to the right of the oxygen in the ring, numbered 1, 2, 3, and so on, depending on whether or not or how big the ring is. And so, for example, if the bond was formed between carbon 1 in one of the sugar molecules and carbon 2 in the other sugar molecule, we would call it a 1-2 glycosidic linkage. If the bond was formed between carbon 1 of one sugar and carbon 4 of the other sugar, we would call it a 1-4 glycosidic linkage. This distinction will become important in a moment when we discuss how plants and animals and organisms combine sugar molecules together for storage and for structural purposes. So now moving beyond disaccharides to polysaccharides, which is more than two monosaccharides stuck together, let's consider a few of the examples for how this is done. One of the ways polysaccharides are used is to store sugars to be used later. Two of the most common examples of storage polysaccharides are starch in plants and glycogen in animals. Starch is a polymer of glucose used by plants to store their sugar. When it's in its linear form, that is, each sugar is bound to just two other sugars, one at either end, that linear form is called amylose. But there's also the ability to form a branched form where a sugar can be bound to one sugar at either end and another sugar off the sides, if you will. So it can be branched, and that is called amylopectin in the starch variety. Now shifting to animals, glycogen is the polymer of glucose that animals use to store their sugars. Glycogen is highly branched, that is, most of the carbon or the sugars are bound to multiple other sugar molecules not just in a chain. And in animals, usually glycogen is stored in liver and muscle cells, where it can eventually be released and broken down for the energy needs of the organism. Another type of polysaccharide that I mentioned is the structural polysaccharides. These are combinations of sugars where that final molecule is not used to store the sugars for later use, but rather to create a structure that gives rigidity to the organism. One example is cellulose. This is a structural polysaccharide found in plant cells. Its monomers are glucoses, and its sugars are arranged in a particular way, again denoting which two carbons are involved in that bond and whether or not those sugars are in the alpha or beta configuration. In the cellulose example, those glucose monomers are held together by 1,4 glycosidic linkages of beta glucose. So beta glucose again means that the hydroxyl group is pointed above the plane of the ring, and 1,4 means that it's carbon 1 on one glucose bound to carbon 4 on another glucose to form the cellulose. Starch, the storage form, is a 1,4 linkage of alpha glucose monomers for reference. Another type of structural polysaccharide is called chitin, spelled C-H-I-T-I-N, and this is a structural polysaccharide found in fungal cell walls and the exoskeletons of arthropods. So things like insects that have those rigid extracellular surfaces, those are sometimes made up of chitin. And this is a slightly modified form of the sugar, where it's the sugar molecule to which are bound other functional groups that give it its unique structure that can then be used for these structural purposes. Okay, just to summarize a few of the things that we've talked about today. Macromolecules are polymers made up of monomers. Polymers can be formed by condensation reactions that release a small molecule. If those condensation reactions release water, it's called a dehydration reaction. And the reverse of that is a hydrolysis reaction that uses water to break apart the polymer. Carbohydrates can consist of one, called a monosaccharide, two, called a disaccharide, or more, called a polysaccharide, sugar monomers. Sugar monomers are linked together by glycosidic linkages. And when we describe the structure of a ringed sugar, alpha describes when the hydroxyl group is pointed below the surface of the ring, and beta is when the hydroxyl group is pointed above the surface or the plane of the ring. In addition to storing sugars for energy needs, polysaccharides can also provide structure to cells and to organisms.